Ability Beat is sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Amy Snyder from the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of an interview with Beth Gallagher, CEO of LifeWorks, a progressive provider in California. But first, disability news for the week of February 6, 2017. On Tuesday night last week, President Trump nominated Neil Gorsuch, a federal appellate judge, as his nominee to replace the late Antonin Scalia to the Supreme Court. As it pertains to disability issues, two cases stand out during Judge Gorsuch's time at the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Assistant Professor Grace Huang worked at Kansas State University with great success for 15 years. After a cancer diagnosis, she requested and received a six-month leave of absence covering the fall 2009 semester while she recovered from a bone marrow transplant. As she was preparing to return to teaching in January, the campus erupted in a flu epidemic. Because a flu infection would have been dangerous given her compromised immune system, Professor Huang asked for further short leave during which she could have worked from home. The university denied her request and Huang sued. Under established disability rights laws, a request for leave due to a disability must be evaluated on a case-by-case basis to decide whether the request would present an undue hardship to the employer. This is a factual determination, yet before any evidence could be presented in the case on whether such an accommodation might present a problem for KSU, a federally funded multi-million-dollar employer, Judge Gorsuch ruled that Professor Grace Huang's request for an additional leave of absence was simply unreasonable. In a second disability rights case, an impartial hearing officer, an administrative law judge, and a federal district court judge all agreed that a young boy with autism, Luke, needed placement in a residential school program due to his total lack of progress in generalizing skills or applying skills learned at school to other environments. Judge Gorsuch wrote the opinion reversing the case. He found that because Luke was making some progress toward his educational goals in the public school, even though it was undisputed there was no progress outside of school, the school district had met its obligations under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. But Congress had made it clear that the IDEA should help students make progress toward independent living, generally, not just in school. The narrow and outdated standard used by Judge Gorsuch is now under review in the U.S. Supreme Court. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, Judge Gorsuch's rulings on the disability cases in front of him thus far raise important questions about his recognition of the rights of individuals with disabilities and his willingness to ensure that people with disabilities receive individualized justice. The Trump administration is planning to fundamentally alter Medicaid, a move that could according to experts, mean big changes to everything from healthcare to home and community-based services, waivers for people with developmental disabilities. President Trump and his top advisors have indicated that they support moving to a block grant system for Medicaid. Though details are scant, such a shift may mean significantly less funding for Medicaid and greater control at the state level. Currently, Medicaid programs are administered by the states, but they must meet certain federal requirements. In exchange, states receive matching federal grants with no set cap. Under a block grant system, however, states would likely get a finite amount of federal dollars for their Medicaid programs and more autonomy to set rules affecting everything from eligibility to coverage. The prospect of such a dramatic shift has disability advocates bracing, said Marty Ford, Senior Executive Officer for Public Policy at the ARC, quote, "We are very, very concerned," end quote. Individuals with developmental disabilities depend on Medicaid for everything from medical services to critical supports to help them live in the community. Ford said that shifting to block grants could lead to eligibility changes, coverage cutbacks, and longer waiting lists for Medicaid, home, and community-based services waivers, among other consequences. Said Julia Bascom, Executive Director of the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, quote, "The bottom line is that Medicaid is already way underfunded. You see this already in states that have waiting lists and low wages for direct support professionals. And the fact is that this is just going to get worse with block grants," end quote. Advocates say they're actively talking to lawmakers on Capitol Hill about the importance of Medicaid for people with disabilities, and they're encouraging stakeholders to do the same. Such conversations are vital since some lawmakers don't realize how Medicaid serves people with disabilities instead of thinking of it merely as a poverty program, according to Bascom. And finally, self-driving cars aren't crisscrossing the streets just yet, but disability advocates are already looking to the technology as a potential solution for those who can't get around on their own. In a study released by the Boston-based Ruderman Family Foundation this month, researchers found self-driving cars would dramatically improve the lives of residents with disabilities by making it easier and cheaper for them to travel, especially to and from a job. The study said, quote, "Approximately 2 million individuals with disabilities would have new employment opportunities. New transportation technologies have the potential to help those with disabilities enjoy the activities that those without disabilities take for granted," end quote. Many expect self-driving cars to upend the traditional concept of car ownership, transitioning to a shared model along the lines of Uber or Zipcar. Although disability advocate Sarah Kaplan still has a lot of questions about the technology, she said self-driving cars could be a difference maker when they're ready for the road. Kaplan has cerebral palsy and uses a motorized wheelchair much of the time. She said, quote, "In theory, the idea is wonderful. I think it would increase the possibilities for employment for a lot of people with disabilities. Public transportation is not something that's easily accessible. In a lot of parts of the country, those services aren't available," end quote. Sirtak Karaman, president of the Cambridge-based Optimus Ride, which is developing self-driving technology, said his company is, quote, "really interested in being able to work with people with disabilities," end quote. The organization is working with the Perkins School for the Blind to identify ways autonomous vehicles can help those with visual impairment. Karaman said, quote, "A lot of people, when they think about artificial intelligence and robotics, they think it's going to put a lot of people out of work. But there are a lot of people with disabilities who will be able to work," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Maybe you can drive my car. And maybe I'll love you.
You can drive my car.
I told that girl that my prospects were good. She said,
"Baby, it's understood. Working for peanuts, it's all very fine. I can show you
and drive my car. Do, 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 do. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Do, 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 do. Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I love you.
You can drive my car.
Beep, 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 beep.
I told that girl I like a star right away, and she said,
listen, baby, I got something to say.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by my guest on the phone, Beth Gallagher. Beth is the founder and director of LifeWorks, a provider in California, and she's here today to tell us about all the great work that they're doing. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Thanks a lot, Vicki. Appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about what LifeWorks is and how you got involved, maybe a little bit about your history and how you came to be the director of that organization.
Well, after I got out of college, honestly, I kind of landed in the disability services field completely by accident, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. So I started working immediately after college in a group home. In a large organization in Northern California. And within just a few months, I knew this is exactly where I'm supposed to be, even though it wasn't what I studied in college. I ended up staying there for almost 21 years. And then about 11 years ago, I decided to move to San Diego for love. And I needed a job. And so I had some colleagues down in the San Diego area, and their agencies were full up as far as director-level people were going. So they encouraged me against my better thinking that I should probably start my own agency. And so I did, and it's 11 years old last month. And so we started out first working through San Diego State University Foundation, and then about 3 or 4 years later, we incorporated on our own. And so now we support 32 people. In the community, we provide comprehensive and customized support for people with developmental disabilities. So the label of the type of support that we do is supported living services. And in addition, we also do some customized employment situations as well. So kind of got into it by accident, but it's been 30 years of kind of a perfect match.
And so, as an organization, I mean, I think in Illinois in particular, when people think of providers, they think of people, of organizations that run group homes of, you know, 4 to 8 individuals, and those folks all go to the day program, and when they go out in the community, they go out in groups to the mall, to the movies, to bowling, to whatever. How does your program at LifeWorks differ from that model?
It differs radically, actually. The support services that we set up, none of them are what you might consider to be prepackaged or contrived. So it's not a home that they move into. It's not a service that we offer them. It's not anything that's already designed. When somebody is referred to LifeWorks for services, we start from the ground up and we create services around whatever their needs are and whatever their individual interests are. So everybody's life looks completely different, just like my life looks completely different than your life. I used to provide, congregate living situations when I was in Northern California, and I think as far as the group home services, we did a really good job, but I firmly believe that you can't really customize support when people are living in a place that they didn't choose, and when they have roommates that they didn't choose, and when they have employees. Or support staff that they didn't choose. Even the best-run congregate living situation just can't provide the level of individualized and customized support that we can, because they're working with quotas or, the amount of people that live there versus the amount of employees that are on shift, and there's always some sort of compromise along the way. So this is really designed one person at a time. And so out of the 32 people that we support, none of those services look even remotely similar. They're all really different.
And so let's say, for instance, you have a new person who is wanting services from LifeWorks. Walk us through a little bit of what that process would look like. And if you want to picture one of your current people in your head while you're doing that, that's perfectly fine, sure. Understanding that, you know, and we don't want to say names and so forth.
Right. So it depends on, so the service system in California is called the Regional Center System, and they're the people that provide resource development for people with developmental disabilities. They do case management. So a referral would come from the regional center system, and the regional center would send us information on Joe. And what we would do is start the assessment process, which is designed to be about 3 months. Again, everybody's assessment process is different because it depends on how much we need to learn and how much information is readily available. So we spend roughly 3 months doing an assessment. Most of that time is not so much rifling through papers and reports and stuff like that, but it's literally spent just spending time with that person, hanging out, figuring out what makes them tick, figuring out what would create their best day ever, and sometimes more importantly, what would create their worst day ever. So that we can avoid those pitfalls that probably have been gone down before. So we design, through that assessment, we design a plan, and we send that plan into the system alongside of a budget, and the system either accepts it or says, no, we need more help here, or we need to work this out, or we need to negotiate about the budget. And once the budget is all put in place, we go into a time frame called procurement. And procurement is the time frame where we find the place to live. We find the employees that are going to work with that person. We get that person, those people trained up to work with Joe. We get all the stuff that they needed for their house, you know, furniture, plates, towels, meet the neighbors, all that kind of stuff. And we put together, you know, a really good team to support them. And once everything is in place, and everybody's ready to go and everybody feels comfortable, then we decide the move-in date. And on that day, supported living starts, and that person starts into their new plan.
And what about daytime? How is that figured out?
Most of the people that we support, we offer customized support services for vocational services as well. So some people go to the traditional day program. Not very many. I would say probably a handful of the people that we support go to the traditional day program. The rest of the people that we support receive customized services because they either just don't like the traditional day program or they've been kicked out. We support a lot of people who have been kind of not supported by other organizations because of their severe reputation. And mm-hmm. So they may have been kicked out of or excluded from certain day programs. So we design work opportunities for people. That could mean going to school. That could mean, you know, getting a job. That could mean volunteering. That could mean any variety of things. Working on a certain, craft that might turn into employment, that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. all very customized depending on the person.
I guess, you know, the question that comes into mind, the biggest question for me is how different is California funding-wise from Illinois? Because I could see somebody, you know, a provider developing a plan for an individual that needed a lot of support to live in their own home, and the state would say, can't work. Mm-hmm. California must be very different.
Well, California, I know that one of the biggest differences is that California is the only entitlement state in the nation. And so the Lanterman Act in California entitles people to services. So it is different as far as waiting lists and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that we've done a fairly good job at is being able to show that once somebody gets the right amount of support, that they can lower off of the grid or off the service system dollar more quickly than they can in congregate living. So we have a huge push, not only in our organization, but in a lot of the state organizations that we're on, to really tell the stories of people who have been successful living in their own home and how the dollars attached to those people has been affected, because that's what's really going to You know, the great story isn't going to hit the legislator as much as the dollars associated with that are going to hit it. Taxpayers want to know, how is this going to affect me? And we have, you know, we have a gentleman that I'll call John, who lived in a 12-bed group home for about the first 30 years of his life. And when I met him, he was roughly 30. He wanted to live in his own home. We had to end up going to court in order to get him out of that group home and into his own home. And now, 10 years later, he is living in his own apartment. He's married. He has a job where he's making too much money, so he's no longer eligible for SSI. He has his own benefits, so he's not on the state dole for benefits. So his job or his life looks exactly like it he wanted it to, where in the group home, he was receiving services that were much more than what he actually needed. But because that's the type of living situation that was attached to him, he was receiving those dollars even though that wasn't necessary. And so now the amount of money that it's costing to support him is really minimal. I would say not even a tenth of what it cost before.
Well, that's impressive. How many people would you, you said you support 32 people currently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On average, how many hours a day do your staff members directly support individuals on average?
That's a really hard question. I would say on average, it would probably be 10 hours a day. I don't know. We provide, trying to think of how many hours we provide a month.
And I'm sure that it's, you know, it varies by person, obviously.
Yeah, we provide anything from like 3 hours a week to 48 hours a day. In other words, we have one person that receives 24-hour-a-day services with two people with him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really varied. But I would say that the middle of the road would probably be 8 to 10 hours.
Mm-hmm. And does that vary? I mean, it's not all daytime hours, some day, some night, depending on what the individual needs.
Yeah. Some people just have, like, maybe a paid roommate that all they do is provide some kind of stability and guidance. And, you know, because their needs are a little less predictable, like, they might have some mental health needs that are fairly unpredictable as far as timing, then they would have a paid roommate that lived there that they could, you know, throw a topic at that they could just talk something out. Then other people have behavior challenges or medical challenges or, you know, have a lot of complicated physical needs that need somebody there to just to be able to transfer and to eat and that kind of thing. So it really varies. We provide roughly about 3,600 hours a month of services for the 32 people that we support.
And only 32 people doesn't seem like very many when you look at some of the agencies that I know of that support literally hundreds of people.
Yeah, I agree. And the 32 to me sometimes seems like it's about a billion, depending on the day. But one of our goals in our mission statement is to always stay small and value driven and to always be able to have our organization not grow too much where we wouldn't be able to hear the voice of all the stakeholders involved. I think we're always struggling with that. And I think if we got much bigger, that would not be a possibility. The organization that I worked with before was a lot bigger. And one of the things that I realized about my time and my energy was it was not any longer being spent being with people that were receiving services. It was, you know, paperwork and budgets and reprimands and hiring and all that kind of stuff. And that's not why I got promoted. I got promoted because I was really good at being with people with disabilities, and suddenly I was no longer with people with disabilities. It didn't make sense. So I don't want LifeWorks to get possibly any bigger. We're not sure yet. Right now we have a soft cap, but our dream is not to be big. Or if we needed to expand, what we would probably do is spin another agency off and help them out, mentor them until they got up and running.
Well, that was going to be one of my next questions. Are there other agencies like yours, or are you unique in your area?
Both. I think there's a lot of supported living organizations in San Diego itself. I think there's 24 just in San Diego County. But I think we are unique in that we do things a little bit differently as far as how we support people and how we create the services that we do, and our constant use of person-centered planning and how we create teams around people. And it's very, I think we're unique in that it's customized. Supported living is designed to be customized, but I think that we put a bigger push on really making it individualized and really looking at things one person at a time.
And who do those teams consist of, typically?
Oh, that's a really good question. So we really hire based on what the person needs, and we hire based more on relationships than we do on if the person has, 13 years of experience. Because in my experience sometimes is overrated, depending on where they worked before, or, they could have had 13 years of being a really horrible employee. Just because you have experience doesn't mean that you're really good at what you do. So we hire based on relationship, and so the person that's receiving services always is a part of the hiring process. And they and or their family, depending on the situation, make the final call about who's going to be hired to be on that team. So, for instance, I have one young man who is really, really creative and loves music and is an aspiring artist and wants to do that as a living. He's also a young man, so he likes to go out. So he has an employee who's also an aspiring artist and a musician, and he goes to like open mic nights with that guy, and he also does a lot of painting with that guy. He has also, his roommate is kind of a younger guy like him, and so the roommate kind of turned out to be kind of his wingman, and they go see live music at a bar or something like that. So it all depends on, what that person wants to do. With that gentleman, I wouldn't have a bunch of 50-year-old ladies working with him. Mm-hmm. He's a 23-year-old dude that wants to be out in the community, and so he has decided what he wants those people to look like and actually act like. So he's told us, how old he wants them to be. He's told us what characteristics he wants them to have. And he has control over who's going to be the final choice. And he also has control over if he's going to terminate those people and ask them not to be on his team anymore.
That's pretty important.
So it just really depends. So people are not hired necessarily to be LifeWorks or employees of LifeWorks, although they are, because, I have to put them on payroll somewhere, but they're hired specifically for a person. We do our advertising specifically for a unique individual, not for, a community support facilitator, which is that role.
So it's not a typical shell game like, you hire a bunch of people and then move them around where you need them.
No, that doesn't really make sense, because we're really talking about relationship. And so I think that's probably one of the things that's one of the main differences between us and a lot of other organizations, is they do exactly that. And I'd rather take the time and figure out if there's a relationship that's possibly going to evolve out of that, rather than just find a really good person to put on a team. It seems like it's more fruitful. What we're really looking for is to help people not be dependent on LifeWorks anymore. And the only way that can really happen is that they create relationships outside of LifeWorks with non-paid people. So if they're not able to have relationships with the team members, then that's likely not going to happen.
Right.
So that's where our focus is.
Well, it's very interesting. Are parents or family members ever part of these teams, or is it strictly staff from LifeWorks?
You mean as far as paid employees?
No. I mean just helping to make decisions about the individual.
Yeah. Definitely. If they want to be involved, and it's really up to the person. So if the person wants their parents involved, and the parents want to be involved, we are very much open to that. I would say easily over half of the teams that we have, maybe even more than that, 3/4 of the teams we have at least one family member involved. As long as the person's open to their family member being involved, then they're welcome. We do at least monthly team meetings where everybody gets together at the person's house, and we talk, and family members are there. And so it's really, really helpful. It's much easier to be an active support in the person's own home than it ever was in congregate living, is what parents say all the time.
Well, it's an amazing model.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. I'm so glad you could be on the show today. We are out of time, but I hope we might be able to get you to come to Illinois again sometime to teach what you do to some of the providers here. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Vicki. I appreciate it.
Beth Gallagher of LifeWorks. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas.